Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for Thursday, May 10th, 2012. This is Michael Norris, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-hosts, Jerry Oates and Bobby Simmons from the wonderful Peach State of Georgia. How are you guys doing?
Well, I'm doing wonderful. I just got in before we went on there hearing about this burger joint.
I drove to Kentucky last Friday. A friend of mine, also a member of my church, a couple, their daughter was getting married, and she had asked me if I would drive up and do the ceremony, and I'd promised her I would. And they had the rehearsal dinner on Friday night, and it was good. And it, you know, I stuck around with them while they were decorating. It got to be, you know, between 9:30 and 10 o'clock, and I wanted something to drink, and they recommended a place called the Root Beer Shack.
Clear that up, Bobby. You wanted something to drink.
Yeah. And it was it's an old drive-in in Corbin, Kentucky, right on the main street, and it looks like something out of the 50s. And they said, you'll know it, you're there when you see all the traffic, all the cars. Well, I didn't know what to expect. But anyway, when I drove down there, there was probably 50 or 75 cars parked any way you could imagine to get on the lot around this place, and as far away as a half a block away, parking on the street. And they probably had about six or seven women that were the car hops. There was no inside dining at all. And they were running down the street waiting on people. And Angela recommended that I get a Dixie burger. I try a Dixie burger. So I ordered one. And what it is, it's just a regular size hamburger, but it is hand squished ground beef. It's not a patty. It was about a quarter inch thick, and all they put on it is an onion, a pickle, and barbecue sauce. And it was absolutely outstanding.
Now, was that the only place open in Corbin, Kentucky?
No, they had McDonald's and Burger King, and
really,
they had all the. Yeah, it's a decent size. It's like any of those little towns you run up and down 75 and see. You know, they got a bunch of hotels and motels, and you know, the little fast food restaurants right around the expressway. But you kind of get back down into town, and this was just a little local thing there. And they say that it is like that every night of the week, and it's seasonal. They're only open like in the spring and the summer. They said when it starts getting cool, they shut down, don't open back up till spring.
How long they been there? For years.
Been there for years. They said it started out as an A&W root beer, and they lost the franchise for whatever reason and made the people that owned it mad, so they just said, well, we'll show you. And they, I don't know what kind of root beer they serve, but it sure is good. You can buy it. They'll bring it out to you in a frosty mug, or you can get it in a cup to go, and they even sell it. You can buy a gallon jug for $3 and take it home with you.
We got it going on.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm glad you had a good weekend.
It was not bad. It was actually, the wedding was very, very nice, and people up there were very cordial to me, so it wasn't bad at all.
My trip was not bad at all either, except for the standing in line at Philadelphia Airport to get through security for nearly 30 minutes. And then the flight wasn't bad. I was not near as cramped as I thought I would be. It was a very nice flight, a very quick flight. It was under 2 hours. Got there, and I hadn't been in the Atlanta airport since 1999 when I flew to Wyoming for family vacation that we all took. And I didn't realize that they had a train that took you out to the car dealer or the car rental place. So I stood in line another 30 minutes there to get my car. But after that, it was fine. And except, of course, were you guys last Friday giving away? Well, of course, you weren't there, but were they giving away free land in Henry County last Friday?
No, but it looks like a land rush every Friday about that time of day.
I cannot believe it 3:15 in the afternoon. It was bumper to bumper both ways, north and south on 75.
Yeah, it's like that every week, man. Every Friday, and a lot of Saturdays. I mean, I don't know.
But trip wasn't bad. The hotel room I got was nice. Had a nice dinner with the family and my daughter and a couple of her friends and everything. We went and tried Thai food. Either one of you ever eaten Thai food?
No, sir.
No.
Well, we ordered. My daughter's she's very adventurous, and I couldn't believe for a little town like Milledgeville, they've got all kind of different little niche restaurants. But this one served Chinese food, Thai food. It's a Thai. Its main thing is Thai, but they also serve Japanese food and Chinese food and various other things. So my daughter said, you know, we normally eat, you know, when I eat here, I get the very mild because it's very spicy one. You know, not me. I'm Mr. Macho, and I eat Cajun food and all this stuff. Ordered it spicy. Son, I got about 6 spoonfuls. I couldn't eat anymore. I thought
lit
I was
on
fire. Yeah, it did, but it was very good. So, you know, that was nice. And, of course, my daughter graduated Saturday morning. And other than being tremendously hot, it was real nice. It was a real nice ceremony and everything. They had the largest graduating class from GCSU that they've ever had. They topped last year's. I think last year's was a little over 1,000. They had close to 1,100.
Good Lord.
This crowd. Yeah. And it was a 3.5. Well, it wasn't quite. It was supposed to be a three hour ceremony. It didn't quite get that long. And then I was staying in Macon, so I had to get up early. The graduation started at 9:00. In order to get good seats, we needed to be there right at 8:00. So I had to drive from Macon, which is a little under an hour drive over there, and then we went back to my daughter's apartment, and my former wife fixed spaghetti for everybody, and that was real good. And then I had committed to go to the Georgia State Fair to see the guy that was our traveling clown last year, and I didn't want to be that close and not see him because I never know where our paths will cross again, even though I was beat. So I went there and bought one of his shows and spent a few minutes with him, and then I got back to the hotel, and I was in bed by 8:30. And then I got up the next morning, Sunday morning, and left early because I figured, well, as long as it took me to get through Philadelphia's airport, Hartsfield's twice as busy, so it's going to take longer. It took me all of 3 minutes to get through security. I turned in my rental car, stopped, filled it up, and turned it in. I didn't know how long that process was going to take. I drove it up, parked it, got out, handed the guy the keys, and that was that for that. So I was at the airport 2.5 hours before my flight, but that was fine. I just sat there and watched all the crazy people walking through the airport.
The one good part about my trip, you know, Thursday, Friday, me and Debbie are talking about possibly later this year buying a Kia Soul. We like the way they look, and you know, we really, you know, Debbie likes facts. You know, they got the little hamsters on TV. That's what sold her. But anyway, I told the people I wanted to rent one. I wanted to drive it on the road to see how it handled and how it rode over for a long trip. And I got there Thursday to pick it up. The guy goes, well, we don't have one. And I went, man. I said, the whole reason I rented a car was for that. And he said, well, if I give you an upgrade, will you be happy? And I said, well, what are you going to upgrade me to? And he said, how about that 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee? I said, I am happy as I can be, sir. I'm thoroughly convinced if I'd have had an infant child with me, that thing would have changed its diaper. Man, it had everything you can possibly imagine on a vehicle. All leather. It was absolutely a wonderful ride. Got almost 30 miles to the gallon. It had a sunroof on it that went from the front all the way to the back. The whole top was glass if you wanted it. It was just absolutely gorgeous. And I thought, well, maybe I want one of these rather than the Kia Soul. So I looked online when I got home Saturday night, and it was over $40,000, so I don't really want one.
You thought you wanted
one. I just thought I did, yeah. I knew I was way out of my class and out of my league, but it was nice thinking about it anyway.
You had talked me out of that Corolla that I had originally reserved for the rental car I got because, you know, even though I wasn't all that cramped on the flight, I thought, well, you know, I've had enough time with my knees up under my chin. So I got there and I upgraded. I was hoping to just get another Altima, which is what I drive my personal cars, an Altima. They didn't have one, so they gave me a Chevy Malibu. No, it wasn't a Malibu, it was an Impala. And it had satellite radio in it, Sirius, so I did that. And it also had, I guess all the Hertz and rental cars now come with their own GPS. It's called Never Lost. And I tell you, if I hadn't had that, I'd have never found my way back to that place where to drop it off. But all I had to do is when I got ready to head back to Atlanta, I mashed the button that says Hertz Rental Returns and chose Parksville International and took me right to it. What did you do this weekend, Jerry?
What did I do? I worked this weekend. That's what I did. I rode the beach.
Catch any big feet or swamps or anything on time of the
I'm hunting an anaconda now. That's what I'm after now.
Yeah, I can see. You can't.
Well,
if you happen to find
one, don't call me to come help. I'll read about it in the paper. Jeez.
Oh, man. Well, I didn't really have any plan or topic for us this week. I've been kind of busy since I got back. I've been tied up with the clown was in town through Tuesday, and then I've been putting together the last little pieces of things. I am totally done except for closing out my ticket outlets on Sunday, and then, of course, I got the shows Monday and Tuesday. But the weather up here is, as of today, the rain is gone. It's supposed to be nice through show times or show days, and it was beautiful today. The high today was 66. The sun was out and everything. So it was absolutely gorgeous. And it's supposed to be that way for the rest of this week and first part of next week, so it'll be good for the shows. And we've done
real
well.
What day are your shows actually there, Michael?
Monday and Tuesday.
Monday, Tuesday. Then where do you go?
I have no clue. Hopefully I'll find out this weekend so I can go ahead and make my reservations and everything and not have to wait for the last minute. I don't know. I'm looking at the schedule. I figure I'm either going back to the Hudson Valley area of New York where I started last year or I'm going to Connecticut. I just don't know which yet. Of course, I've been wrong about everything I've tried to get so far, so I may end up Rhode Island. Who knows?
Do you have short jumps, though? I mean, you know.
I haven't had any yet. I mean, they're not terribly long. Last year, I like I said, I started in helping Ronnie with some towns in the Hudson Valley. And then my first town that I did myself was Monticello, New York, which is in that same area. So I was right where I was helping him. I didn't have to move. From there, I went to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, which was about a 3.5-4-hour jump. And then from there, I went from New Jersey, I went to Atlanta, from Atlanta to New Orleans, and then from New Orleans to Fort Pierce, Florida. So those were pretty big jumps. And then this go-around, I went from Carolinas up here, which was about a 4-hour jump.
And you stay in the location how long, Mike?
3 or 4 weeks. usually, you know, in, right in between three, about 25 days or so. And longer if I've got more than one town.
If he ever gets close to Savannah, don't be nice and offer him a place to stay. He never goes away.
Oh. I started to take a picture the other day. I was still in North Carolina on the ride up here or something. I passed a place called Simmons Motor Lodge or Simmons Travel Lodge. So I started stopping to take a picture of it.
Yeah, you can enlarge that picture and put it out front, Bobby.
Yes, sir. Tack it up on the mailbox or something.
Well, you can take in borders. That way you can afford that new Jeep.
Yeah. My wife is, she's listening to the conversation. She said to tell you, I'm not the one who decides who can stay and who can't.
Well, I know that. Nothing going on really in the wrestling business that I know of. Today is Tito Santana's birthday, so we wish him a happy birthday. Can't really talk as to what is going on with the current stuff. I don't keep up with it. But I will say this. I listened to Mike and Les's show last night, and George South was on there with him. I never had the pleasure of being around George. I've met him a time or two at various things, but I highly recommend anybody that wants to get a laugh to listen to that show. In fact, I'm lobbying right now to have George and Bo James have their own show together. They'll never need a guest, and most of the time they won't even need each other. George was that entertaining. Either one of you guys know. Bobby, I know you know him.
Yeah, I've met him. By any chance, on you mentioned Tito Santana's birthday being today, did you by any chance watch the classic clip that Rich had on today with a match with Tito and Charlie Fulton?
No. Was it from TBS?
It's from North Carolina. I think Sonny Fargo was a referee. It's about a 6-minute match. You need to check it out.
Okay.
I mean, I'm it's sure just that was... listen. They locked up. Charlie Fulton grabbed a headlock. They crisscrossed. Fulton hip tossed Santana. Santana kicked him off. No. Let me back up. He hip tossed Santana. He body slammed him, and when he slammed him, he kicked him off. As he got up, Santana body slammed him, and then arm dragged him. I mean, it's about it's chain moves of a high spots for about maybe 45 seconds. And I watched that thing today, and it was so fluid. It was just, you know, everything was boom, 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 boom. Arm drag, got a hole, and you're on the mat. And I thought, God, I miss those days.
If Tito was a good worker, I was, he first came there. In fact, first time I ever saw Charlie Smith, Charlie was walking him around through the dressing room, introducing him to people. I guess he had just left New York or during one of the times he was back and forth, because this had to have been 81 or so when he came in, and he wasn't in Georgia very long, maybe a couple months or so. Of course, he was there earlier in his career. Did he work here as Richard Blood?
He was here as Richard Blood.
I thought he was in Steamboat's real name.
Well,
that was 76 or so, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. We were Ricky Steamboat and I and Charlie were talking in Vegas, and Ricky was telling the story. He said he went to a town one night in Carolinas. He said he don't even remember where he was. Might have been Greenville, Charlotte. He didn't remember. He said, but he got to the town that night, and he was sitting there getting dressed, and he said he heard the door open, and he looked up, and he said Jim Barnett walked in. And he said he thought it was odd that Jim was in a Carolina town, and he said he walked right over to him, and he said, Ricky, my boy, he said, I come to ask you a favor. And Ricky said, yes, sir, what, you know, what's his name? He says, your name, Richard Blood. He said, it's a wonderful wrestling name. He said, and I've got a young man in Georgia I'd like to put it on. Would you have any objections to me using it? So Jim flew to Carolina, to one of those towns up there, to ask permission to use that name.
Wow.
And that's how he got the name.
You know his real name, don't you?
Merced Solis?
That's it.
Solis, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was another one from West Texas State. I think he and Tully Blanchard played it around the same time. Well, see, Jerry, you missed your opportunity. You could have sold your name to somebody.
I bought that name.
Did you? Cyborg charge you for it?
Yeah. $84.
Well, at least you didn't have to pay royalties on it.
Do y'all remember Sandy Parker?
Lady wrestler?
Huh?
A female wrestler? Lady wrestler?
Yeah, black girl.
Yeah. So I was trying. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That made me think of that when Mike said that. I forgot where we were. We were somewhere here in Georgia. And she said, you need to change your name. I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, Jerry Oates. I said, it sounds as good as Dory Funk. She said, yeah, I guess it does, doesn't it? Was you ever around her, Bobby?
You know, I might have met her, Jerry, but I wasn't around her much.
I don't know what in the world happened to that girl. I really liked her. She was a good girl.
She's still around. That documentary that Bobby Simmons starred in, the Lipstick and Dynamite. They did a thing on the ladies' reunion that they have separate of the Cauliflower Alley out in Las Vegas, and she was on there. She was originally from, I want to say, Toronto. She was Canadian.
She was from Canada somewhere, Mike. You're right.
And I think she is, I don't know if she's back there, if she's still around Columbia where the rest of all the girls seem to have ended up. I'm not sure. But, yeah, she was a good worker. She wore two different colored boots all the time. I think that's who she stole
she
that from Carl Cox. He stole it from her, one of the other.
She was a good little worker, too, man.
Yes, she was. She was small. I mean, she was short, but she was stock. It was a good worker.
You know, there were a lot of girls, but, you know, as far as the working ability, I never saw a fascination with many of them that I call workers, you know. That's just my opinion.
Well, they
best
all,
girl
they
worker
had
I ever saw was Kay Noble.
And Kay was good.
Oh, God,
I never saw Penny
like
bad work, but I've heard Penny was a good worker. I never saw her work.
She was good. But Kay Noble threw punches like a guy. She could work.
But you think of who people like Banner and Kay Noble, and they were who they were trained by. They didn't come through that Billy Wolf and then Moolah school where they all worked the same. Kay Noble, I think, was Gus Karras trained her. She was from St. Joe, Missouri originally. Wasn't he the promoter there?
Yes, he was.
So I think he broke her in and trained her. And most
Sonny Myers might have trained her.
Could be.
Did you ever see him work?
Yeah. I've seen. I've got videotape of him from the 50s, and boy, he was smooth as silk.
He was a man, please. Some guy trained her. I don't know who trained her, you know, but I mean, I'm telling you. You know, she was married to Doug Gilbert.
Yeah. She was there early in her career. I think she was married a time or two after they divorced.
I'm pretty sure of that.
But yeah, she was real good, and like Betty Nicolai and Gene Antone, they were all from that Kansas City area, or Missouri area, I should say, and pretty much stayed in that area. But if you see girls like that work, didn't come out of that, you know, the Moolah school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they worked a different style than, I guess, the way the Moolah's girls were trained.
Yeah, they all pretty much worked the same.
Well, you look back at some of the, you look at some of the old girls that, that came out of Moolah School. There was some that, that turned out to be pretty good workers. Joyce Grable did okay. You know, Joyce can work.
Yeah.
Judy Martin was okay. But I, but I'll tell you, Matt, if you ever go back and watch her work, man, you just you're just amazed at. And I don't guess I ever really noticed it until I looked at it closer. But Tony Rose was horrible.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, that was just.
Vicky Williams was good.
Vicky Williams, I always worked well with Vicky when I would referee her matches.
She was a strange cookie.
Yes, yes.
She supposedly lives here in Savannah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with the business at all.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, they. I'll tell you, as far as you know, in the day, the girls that are working today, if you ever get a chance. Watch Bo's wife Misty work. Misty's a good worker. Reminds me of Susan Green many, many years ago.
Yeah, she's so tall. Yeah,
tall, blonde. Yeah, but.
Now, Susan was a good worker.
Susan,
trained you. Joe Blanchard trained her, so you know she wasn't from. You know, it seems like most of the ones that were trained as a. And I don't mean this to sound, you know, chauvinistic or anything. Most of the ones that were trained by a male worker worked that style, worked more of a regular style as opposed to...
I always wanted to train one that had, you know, athletic ability, you know, could... It never happened, but, yeah, it's... You could tell when guys train them. Versus, you know.
You've been trying to train your wife for how many years?
It's the other way around.
That's what I was saying. You know, that it just don't work.
Well, on the opposite end of that, you know, there was a couple of guys that were trained by Lady Russell. I know Susan Green still to this day trains people, but you guys remember Eddie Sullivan, right? Benny Hazar? That worked in the Gulf Coast territory for so many years, Eddie Sullivan.
He was trained
by Princess Tona Toma. That's who trained him.
That's the first time I've heard of a girl training a guy.
Yep. That's who trained him. Well, Terry Latham was trained by Annie Laverne. And, well, she was married to Pancho Villa, and Pancho had a little bit of dealing with training Terry, but for the most part, it was Ann Laverne that trained him. There were few and far between, but there were a few that did get trained by lady wrestlers. And there again, they were all, you know, from a different school. I don't know who trained Ann Laverne or how she, because she was in the business from the 40s on. And
I wrestled a lot of guys that nobody trained. I'm sure y'all did too.
You could be probably describing me, but you and I never wrestled each other.
I told somebody out in Vegas the line that you told Jerry on here when you worked with Frank Hickey, where you locked up with him, and he asked, he says, "Hey, Bubba, are you smart?"
He said,
"That's one of the funniest lines I've heard in a long time."
He heard my thing. He said, "Hey, kid, are you smart to the booth?"
Oh, goodness.
Somebody has found old videos. Yeah, they haven't posted yet. They're still trying to get everything lined up. Somebody on one of the message boards listed a match with the Assassins. And I don't think it was Jody and Tom. I think it's Guy Mitchell and Joe Tommaso, who worked the Assassin gimmick in the Midwest, working against Hickey. At that time, he was called Bozo Brown, and somebody else. I can't remember who the other person. Oh, Bob Sabre, who later became, in the early 60s, was a takeoff on the Beatles and used the name George Ringo. He later became a photographer, but he worked around for Bruiser and Snyder in Indianapolis. I'm anxious to see when that finally shows up, because I've never seen Hickey work.
But it was a treat, toward the end of his career.
According to him, I couldn't work.
Tom was using him, and I don't remember. God, this was, it had to be right at the end of his career. It had to be in the 70s. And Tom was. You know, I guess Tom, had a soft spot, because, of course he trained Tom. And so Tom's trying to use him.
Did he work for Gunkel at all, Bobby?
No, this is when I was just putting the ring up and working I was ushering at the auditorium, and I was...
Well, Bobby, that's when I worked with him, was in 70.
Okay, well, then that's about when this was.
And Tom was the booker. That was
I seen him in Griffin one night, and the guy, he'd come out and he wore the cape and the whole bit, and a guy leg dived him, did a step over toe hold on him, and he was laying flat on his back, cupped his hands over his mouth, and was calling high spots.
I felt sorry for him. I really did.
Yeah.
Even if he dug me out like that, I still feel sorry for him.
But he worked. Even later than that, it had to have been almost 10 years later. Whenever Tom was booking in Memphis, he came in and did a job on TV in Memphis. So I take it back. I have seen him work, because I've seen a videotape of that match with him. It did last maybe 2 or 3 minutes. I can't even remember who he was working with.
I got no idea what age he was when I worked with him in 70.
Oh, yeah. He was up there.
Wasn't he, Bobby?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he was around in if not as far back as the 30s, he was definitely around in the 40s using the name Bozo Brown.
Where was he out of?
I don't know. I want to say Columbus, Ohio, but I'm not sure.
Well, where did he spend his career? Did he spend all this? As a young man, was he always in the business, or?
As far as I know, I don't know. I know he did. I don't know if he did carnival wrestling or not. I know he supposedly was a shooter, and had a bit of a background, but I don't know if it was from at shows or where he got his experience. If he trained Tom, that means he had to been on the West Coast, because Tom was from Los Angeles. And isn't that where he was from, Bobby? Wasn't his father a Los Angeles policeman or detective?
I think so. Well, I know very little about him, but just the things I've heard, but the people I've talked to said he was fascinated with the circus.
Yeah, Bill Bowman was.
He was just absolutely. They said it might have been Bill telling me these stories, and if he's listening, he can tell them far better than me. But he said that he had in his trunk. He said his trunk would just be absolutely packed, stuffed with boxes, and said he would take them out and he would show people how to pack the trunk to get everything back in there.
Speaking of which, Bill is on. Let me get Bill on the line with us.
Yeah, he knows. He knows better than me.
Sorry for the last minute, but we need some background on Frank Hickey.
On Frank Hickey?
Frank Hickey, yeah.
I don't know anything about him.
Well, before we get you on the air, Mike says you trained him.
I'm glad I'm not paying you for this appearance. Oh, well, he hung up on me.
Good. That smart remark. He needs to hang up.
Somebody told me, they said he would, that all these boxes he had in his trunk, said he had all these different outfits. And he always wore the big capes, and he would, you know, and he got all that from watching circus performers.
He wore that skull hat, you know, that.
Oh, yeah.
He'd like, he might have been a cannon man.
That's so exactly what he reminded me of.
Didn't what he looked
yeah.
like.
But I know I've seen pictures of him, and there again I'm thinking it was from Ohio, that he also collected old race cars. And you know, I've seen pictures of him in a garage full of old, and I'm talking about the old one-seater type, the ones that they ran, like in wacky races, and those daring young men, and that Johnny Jalopy type car.
For some reason or another, I think he wound up in West Virginia, or was from West Virginia. I don't know what makes me say that. I may be totally wrong.
No,
he was a sport.
Idea.
Oh, you know about him putting down the papers in the dressing room.
Yeah, I was putting those stories, yeah.
Yeah, I saw him do that.
But I think it was Levi was telling me, because somewhere along the line, Levi went on a trip with him. And I don't know where they may have worked together, but anyway, he was talking about he always had motor oil and any kind of thing you could need to repair your car in his car, too, so he was always prepared.
He might have been a Boy Scout at one time.
Oh.
Might have been.
Who knows? Troop master, I don't know. We had all kinds, brother.
We had a bunch of them pass through our business, didn't we?
Who else did you ever see, Jerry, that did strange things in the dressing room? I mean, there were some people who had some crazy quirks.
You remember Frankie Lane?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was a strange cookie.
Isn't that the one Zulu hit in the head? Or was that Frank?
Yeah.
That's Frankie Lane. That's the one Zulu hit with the pipe.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I don't ever know what happened to him either.
Yeah. He, who, a Zulu or Frankie Lane?
Frankie, well, you could go either way on that one.
Well, yeah, Frankie Lane came in here, you know, when I met him and he came through here, he was doing some kind of cowboy deal. He would wear, he had cowboy boots and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened to Zulu?
Well, I don't know where he wound up.
Last I heard, he was driving a cab in San Francisco, but I have no. I can't believe him being sworn up to the cab license.
How would he know where to go if somebody? I mean, you know. Jeez.
I don't know.
I may have told this on here. I don't know. He showed up at the office one Friday. We were running. It might have been I don't know if it's Auditorium or the Omni or what we were running, but we had people lined halfway up the street buying tickets. And I went up front out of the back office to open up a second window to try to, you know, make the line move quicker. And I'm up there selling tickets. And I heard the door open to the sports arena, and I leaned back and looked through that glass in the door, and I seen it was him coming in. Well, I didn't think nothing about it. I just throwed my hand up and went back doing what I was doing, and he went on in the back. Well, Ole and I think Ronnie West might have been there, Freddie Miller. It was Friday, so they would have been working on TV. And all of a sudden I hear this shouting going on in the back, which, you know, wasn't unusual either. But I stopped and turned and looked, and as I looked, I seen Zulu backing out of the back office. And all I can hear him saying is, "I'll shoot you, I'll shoot you." And I'm thinking, what is going on here? And as Zulu backs up past the glass in that door, he has a pistol in his hand. And he's got it pointed at Ole. And he's telling Ole he's going to shoot him. And Ole's screaming at him he don't have the guts to shoot him. And he's calling him everything but a child of the good Lord. And Zulu backed out the front door. And Ole was within 18 inches of this gun. He backed him out the door. He backed him all the way down the sidewalk. Zulu got in his car, drove off, and as he drove off, he was waving the pistol, talking about he was going to shoot him, and Ole was screaming at him and he didn't have guts to shoot him. And that was the last time I ever saw him, I think.
And what was that about?
Who knows? Who knows?
probably complain about a payoff. He did that everywhere he went.
I mean, Zulu was
I don't think he ever lasted anywhere more than a couple of months. Just, you know, they'd run him off.
You know, they talk about football players looking good when they get off the bus. Zulu looked good walking from the dressing room to the ring. But when he got in the ring, it was over.
Yeah, it ended up that
way. He was horrible. He was horrible.
How did he get in the business?
First time I ever saw him was on a tape of with the Sheik.
I was going to say, if I hadn't guessed, the Sheik broke him in.
Yeah, that's – but it was – I mean, he just – well, I know we had a – when we was working for Gunkel, they started promoting – we was going to have a guy in here, Sky High Clark, former Harlem Globetrotter. And nobody had ever seen him, nobody had ever heard of him, but the publicity went on for about 3-4 weeks, and his first night in was on Monday night in Augusta, and we sitting in the Bell Auditorium in the dressing room, and I'm sitting there, and this guy walks in, and he's 7 feet tall if he's an inch, and he weighed about 195 pounds soaking wet. And he walked in, and he walked around shaking hands with everybody. And immediately when you shook hands with him, you thought, well, mm-hmm. And when he sat down over in the corner and he unzipped his little old bag he had, he pulled out a brand new pair of them Carl and Hildegard boots. They had never been laced up. They was as new as a newborn baby's behind. Pulled out a brand new pair of wrestling trunks from Hildegard's and a brand new pair of undertights. And everybody started staring at each other, wondering who in the world's got to get in the ring with this guy. And that was the night that him and Zulu almost come to blows, because they were arguing over who was the biggest attraction and who had the best-looking wife. And I don't even know what all it got into, but I mean, it almost...
Where did he come from?
It was just crazy. Oh, I don't know. He didn't last 2 weeks. Son, he didn't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch. And if he played for the Harlem Globetrotters, son, I'm a NASA rocket scientist. I mean, he didn't have coordination to climb through the ropes.
Who was
I know you've seen that. You've seen guys go to the ring and not know how to get in the ring. That's the way that guy was.
Who worked with him?
They had him in a tag match, and I can't remember who it was. But he stood on the apron and held the rope most of the night.
It was him and Zulu, or him and Bearcat Wilkerson against somebody. It might have been Bill and Joe. I don't know.
It could have been. I don't know. It was awful.
Well, Bill wouldn't talk to us, but I'm going to get Joe and the other Sky brother on the line here. Hey, Joe, what's going on?
Not much, buddy. I'm just sitting there trying to get the internet up.
You always said you have problems getting things up.
But look, I'm getting a lot of static. Let me walk away from that thing. I got you. I know what it is. I got you on the microphone. I'm sorry about that.
That's no problem. We tried to get Bill to tell us about Frank Hickey, and he got insulted and hung up on us. So.
He did. Well, I thought he liked Frank Hickey.
I heard he trained Frank Hickey.
That's what insulted him. Jerry said he trained Frank Hickey.
Yeah, well. Anyway, Bill always got and liked him because he liked circuses and things, you know. So Bill liked circuses too.
Me too.
And, huh?
I said, me too.
Well, I know you do. Put butter on your table.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. But it is fun. So I just come in
with the guy. We were talking about the guy that worked for Gunkel. He was billed as a ex Harlem Globetrotter, and we couldn't remember who worked with him.
Was you guys still here, Joe, when they brought that guy in? He come in, and his name was Sky High Clark.
No.
I couldn't remember if you guys had left or not.
Yeah, I think we might have, because I don't remember him.
Oh, he was awful.
Yeah. I remember a girl wrestler brought in as a Dallas cheerleader one time, and I can't remember her name. But her legs as big as Dr. Jerry Graham's. Yeah.
Maybe they mentioned a Dallas Cowboy, not a Dallas Cowgirl.
Yeah. Yeah, she looked like a stallion walking around and had big legs.
The two girls that we had, when we were working for Gunkel, the two girls that we had the majority of the time was Valerie Griffin.
Yeah.
And Sheila, God, what was her last name? She's from Columbus. Sheila, I can't think of it. Blonde-headed girl.
Sheila Shepherd. No, Sheila Shepherd was dark haired. Sheila Shepherd was from Mobile.
No, this was Sheila something or another. She was from Columbus. Valerie Griffin trained her.
You know, talking about them girls. Are you talking about them girls? Excuse me.
Do what now?
I was asking if Valerie was married to Roger Smith.
Yeah, that's the one that married Roger Smith.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, you're not talking about them girls that was working for Ann and Gunkel, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of them girls was a character, buddy. Yeah. They picked up Hitchhiker, they told me one time.
That's
story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That little boy. Valerie was driving, and Sheila was the one that was in the back seat with the guy, but I can't remember. I cannot think of her last name.
I don't remember it either. But that boy thought she was spastic back there. She was making out like she was going to rape him. That boy climbed out and his first red light to go do, he climbed out the window. By the way, before we start talking about anything, Bobby, did you hear about what Adam said to God?
No.
He asked God, he said, why'd you make Eve so beautiful? He said, so you can love her. He said, why'd you make her built so well? He said, so you can love her. He said, why'd you make her blonde? He said, so you can love her. He said, well, what'd you make her so stupid for? He said, so she can love you.
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, you had Bill on there and he cut out, huh?
Yeah, he's back on that. His phone may have dropped. I may have caught him by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here debating on whether or not to put him back on, so we'll see in a minute.
I heard
Hey, Lynn, this isn't a gong show.
Oh, boy.
I used to like the gong show.
I loved it.
Yeah. Yep.
My favorite was Gene Gene the Dancing Machine.
I loved it.
When I used to like with them, what was it, Groucho Brothers? You know the one that had the duck to come down?
Oh, you bet your life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Groucho Marx, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That was before like all Marx time. None of us were born when Groucho Marx was on there with you.
Probably wasn't thought of yet. Yeah, I heard that when you was born, the doctor spanked the mama instead of you when he saw you. yeah.
Oh.
My brother asked. My brother was born on the same date I was. My oldest brother, and they asked him if he wanted what he wanted for Christmas one year. And a little brother or a present. He's a little brother, and then spent the rest of his life telling me he wished he had the present.
Bill, you there with us this time? Did I catch you by surprise?
The phone cut off.
I thought Jerry insulted you talking about you training Frank Hickey.
No. Frank Hickey was one of the smartest men I'd ever met. Now, people can laugh about it, but he was very, very smart. He, you ask what he did in his career. He was in the Army. He was a tank driver. And he did a lot of things like that. But he knew all the inside and outsides of a tank and how it worked. And so that's how I got interested in talking with him. And then he brought up the circus, and I loved the circus. And he knew everything about the circus. He would go stand and watch them put up the circus. That was back in the old days when they put it up outside. And anyway, he watched it and watched it. And then he had an old Cadillac, and he made boxes to fit in the back seat of his car. There was no back seat. And then all the way through. And each one of them fitted a certain way. And they were painted circus colors. And he had to take them out and show me how it was done and how the circus does this, you know, and all this all the time. He was something else. In the dressing room, when you'd go to the dressing room where he was, you'd find paper everywhere, newspaper all over the floor. And he did that so everybody had clean feet, and he would spray your feet if you wanted your feet sprayed. And he wanted to make sure everybody was clean. And that was one of his biggest bags. But he'd start in the ring, and he'd act like he's man in the trapeze. You know, the way we go, and blah, blah, blah. But he was funny. He finally ended up in Nashville. Him and Homer Dale lived next door to each other at the hotel.
Oh, really?
Then Frank Hickey ended up in the mountains of Kentucky. And every time that Frank Morrell would go up work in Kentucky, he would go by and drop off money. Whoever the guy that promoted, whatever his name was, he became a big star. I'll tell you later on. But anyway, they sent him money up there all the time, maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks or something. But he always had a little money coming in.
Hmm. Yeah. Where was he from originally? Do you know?
I always thought he was from Chicago.
Maybe.
But Tom kept him around because he was his friend. He was that.
Did you tell him about the time that he called Tom out the shopping center?
Oh, to show him how that thing worked?
Yeah.
Yeah, he called Tom out to one of the shopping centers in Atlanta. And Tom drove up and he saw all these boxes, all different colors, all out. And it must have been 25 boxes. And he made Tom stay there so he could show him how to pack a car. You know, Tom was frustrated as could be, but anyway, he went along with that. But I enjoyed my relationship with him. I even took him to the circus. And him and I and my wife and little boy went, and he would pull me by my arm. He said, look how the color's there. Look how that's being put up. Look how that's doing. Blah, blah, blah. And he knew everything about it. He could tell you how much petrol was in the generator running, anything.
Just think, Bill, now you got Michael Norris.
Right. Yes, I really.
He can carry on to the apartment. Tell you
that's what
I need
had
to pay for the skull cap. Yeah.
Spaceman Michael Norris. I like it.
I at times want to call him Frank Hickey. And
all it needs a cape, ain't it?
Yeah, I need a cape and a skull cap, and that's all I need.
Oh,
and I can run on shoes.
But the only thing about Frank Hickey was all the stuff inside those boxes and all of his wrestling outfits smelled of sweat. He never cleaned them. And those old type boots that, you know, had been dyed and changed back and forth, he was a character. He was one of them. Not any more of a character than Joe and Bill Sky, though, I guarantee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us a joke, Joe.
I just told one.
Well, tell another one.
I'll think of one a little bit. That's another pretty good one, I can't remember.
How's your sunglasses business doing, Jeff?
Well, I haven't even done anything else with sunglasses. I'm doing the carpentry yet. But I'm officially now part-time in Biloxi.
Oh, what you say now?
Yeah, I just work 3 days a week. And so I think whenever I quit working them other 2 days, the Sander hired me on because all she's been doing is telling me what I ought to be doing here.
You know what he's been doing too, Michael, is that he's been taping up that bathtub. He's used more of that tape on it. He's used 3 rolls of tape on it to keep it from leaking.
I done put that bathtub in the bathroom, buddy. I done switched it out. All I got to do is finish the wall enclosure. I've been working at it. We was all sitting around on the back porch, and my son was over here helping me and my grandson. And my son's always trying to bring up all kind of stuff, and he brought up about Viagra. And he says, you ever used Viagra, Dad? I said, no, I haven't. He said, what would you do if you had one of them 4-hour deals, if you took Viagra like they talk about on TV? I said, I'd be so proud of it, I'd take my clothes off and walk down the street.
I'd call Ripley's.
Jeff Boxworthy said he'd put one of them ICU gowns on backwards and hang a flag on it.
Oh, boy. Yeah. But he's always trying to get something started with me. Every time he comes around, he's bad as Bill.
How
Bill,
about your dad getting married, Joe?
Oh, he ain't getting married, but he's talking about it. My dad's 102. He had a big thing for him up there where he's living now. He moved up to where my sister's at, and he's in an assisted living home. And had a big thing for him. They had a big party, and he's in the Centurion Club now. Anyway, they had the governor of Oklahoma and the mayor and all involved in it, the police department, because he's a retired policeman. And they come out there and put him on a motorcycle because he rode a motorcycle a lot most of his life and took pictures of him and gave him all kind of awards and different things. And they gave him a picture from Obama and his wife. And he held it up. He said, well, who in the heck is this? He got a little dementia, you know. He said, who in the heck is this? But he used some other words, short words. But anyway, he just looted. But some woman... some of my dad will get married, and him 102. I think Kirk
is happy for his money, that's all.
Yeah. If he stays in there as long, he won't have any.
Yeah, they'll eat your money up.
Huh?
They'll eat your money up.
They already eat up. We got enough left for him to stay for a couple more years, but I think he's lived about 110. I think he's afraid we could get the money and spend it, and that'd drive him nuts. So, he had a good time getting recognized. No, and he's made the papers in Oklahoma and all, so he had a good time.
Are you from Oklahoma?
No, I'm from Mobile. My dad lived by himself till it was about 96 or 98 or something like that. But anyway, he decided that he needed somebody needed to be with him, so he moved my brother to up in Texas there, in Austin, Texas. And then my brother's wife passed away, and he couldn't look after him, so my sister been wanting him up there. So thank goodness she did. We took him up there. And now I think she's trying to figure out some way to send him back. He's about to drive her nuts now.
Your dad was a Mobile City policeman for years, what, Jeff?
Yeah, he worked the wrestling matches whenever. Back then, when they first started here, they didn't even pay the police. The police just went down there and helped them with it, you know. Then they started paying him, and he worked it at Hartland Field, and he worked it at Fort Whiting, at Mobile, and I think he really enjoyed it, because when the mob started saying, he loved to punch somebody. So, anyway, he was with him quite a few years. But
I tell you what, I was afraid of him. He would sit at ringside, and there'd be another policeman sit at another ringside. And Joe and I had a lot of heat going. We came out of the ring and whatever. And he reached back for his billy, not his billy, his slapjack. He was going to hit me side to head. I said, shit on this. Here's Joe's father going to beat the hell out of me.
Yeah, I've done a hard way on television one time, and first time he's ever been around the match. And the guy that's going to give me the hard way, he wouldn't do it until he went out there and talked to him and smartened him up and what was going on. He said, hell no, he's liable to shoot me right on TV. So, yeah. But, you know, some old days, buddy. You go way back. Way back. Who all's on tonight? Jerry, you on there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm the one that told Bill to hang up when I said he trained Hickey. He hung up on me.
They started to make them tag team because they built so much alike. Yeah.
I'm getting ready to hang up again.
Yeah. Oh, but you talking about a trip. You ought to travel around with Bill. I've told y'all a lot of stories you've done, but that place down in Florida, South Florida, I think it's St. Pete. But anyway, it was the Marshall's Cafeteria, and that sucker looked like a big casino or something. It's so big in there. And we're sitting right in the middle of it. And all them old folks in there, man, and, you know, everybody in there was real old and retired probably. But we sitting out there and right in the middle of it, and Bill's eating, and all of a sudden he got a fart full of stuff, and he hollered out, my God, there's a roach in my food. Loud as he could holler. Man, I'm tell you what, you think he was in a Chinese baby naming place, all that ding-dang-dang dropping and forks and knives. And everybody looking around, they just stop eating. And Bill just kept on eating.
Roach and all.
cockroaches now. Me and Billy Spears used to try not to sit by him too much. Because he wasn't sure what he'd say. We had a good time.
Well, that's all that matters.
Huh?
We enjoyed the road. We had a good time because, you know, we got tired of telling each other the same stories and talking about this girl or that girl or whatever. And so we just had a good time all the time. But when it came to business, we did business, and that's what it was all about.
It's just about time you had to pick up Pippi and him, and he had his girlfriend with him, and he kept slapping you on the back of the head, and you pulled that little blank pistol out. You remember that?
Go ahead and tell him.
Anyway, Pippi was messing with him, picking at him, and kept slapping on the back of the head. And they broke down, and Bill put them in there in that Mustang, and she's sitting on his lap with her head bent over up against the roof. There wasn't no room, man. They was in there like sardines. Pippi kept messing with him. Bill kept telling him, you better cut that out, man. And Pippi's, you know, he's a little strong-minded anyhow, but he kept on. Bill reached down and grabbed that pistol and fired at him. Now the girl peed all over his leg. Put a stop to that.
Pepe Lopez or Pepe Figueroa?
What was his last name, Bill? It's Frank Martinez's partner.
Oh, you tell me, that's Figueroa, Gypsy Joe.
Yeah.
Pepe Figueroa.
One of the fighter buzz saw.
You know, he still works.
Yep.
He still works. He goes over to Japan a couple times a year and does hardcore matches with light bulbs and barbed wire and fire and all that crazy stuff.
How old is he now?
70-something.
Oh, easy.
Yeah.
72 or 3 years old.
Frank Martinez told me, you know, Frank's a super nice guy. But Pepe was a little bit wild like him, but he told me, he said he really was a good boy. And they just come up in a rough neighborhood and just had, you know, and had to fight for their life all the time, you know. So, but he said he's a pretty good boy, you know, overall.
But the funny thing about Frank Martinez and Pepe, I had this Mustang, and Nick said, well, I've got this saw, so he married us to them. And we've worked everywhere, in every little small town, every big town, just continuously. But the bad problem with them is that we'd have to fight for our lives every night. And it was just continuous. And it got to be where it wasn't fun anymore, wrestling. It was fighting for your life. And who's going to get killed and whatever, you know. But I'll say credit for him. Him and Frank were tough dudes. But they made us tougher also. Not to brag any.
You mean fight for your life worked with them or just the riots that they would cause?
Riots and things that it would cause. And it just was a problem every night because you had to pick them up somewhere, you know, 3 or 4 blocks away from the arena and digging them, taking them around and this and that. And it just got to be where it wasn't fun.
We should have done them like we did Jim White and his partner at that time. Remember, Bill, we went to Lexington, up there in Lexington, Kentucky? We was working against them, and so we rode them so far close to the thing to let them out. I think we let them out 2 miles away from them and told them to run the clock. Boy, when they got there, they was mad. Yeah, Jim White brought that up two or three times before he passed away.
I thought Bill and Joe was in Corbin, Kentucky.
You got
Ooh.
What?
I said, I bet you two have been to Corbin, Kentucky. That's where Bobby was last weekend.
Oh, we've been there.
We've been to Corbin? We have.
What was you doing up there, Bobby?
I went up there and performed a wedding.
Man, that's some bad places up there.
Well, fortunately, I didn't find none of them.
Well, we used to get on the booking sheet, Nick put on there, don't get off the main highways and don't ask questions after dark. Oh, yeah, and there were some places up there, if you was a stranger, you didn't want to hang around too much.
Yeah, the hotel was right by the interstate. The church was about 5 minutes from the hotel, so.
Yeah. We went to a spot show up there one time in some little town. And way up there in Kentucky, kind of on the, I think it's on the eastern side of it. But anyway, we drove, and it was one of them hot days and everything. So we got to the town. Man, I've been wore out from riding so much anyhow in Tennessee. So we get there, and it's one horse town. That sucker didn't have about three or four buildings in it, and then the high school gym there was made out of wood. So we got there. I just passed the police station, which is probably about big as somebody's little living room. And that's the only thing that was lit up when we got there, besides the gym. So we got in there, and that policeman said, "Which one of you is Joe Sky?" And I said, "I am." He said, "The Rassen office called. I want you to call him back as soon as you get here." I said, "Oh, okay. Where's the phone at?" And he said, "Down at the police station." It was only a block and a half from the police station. And I said, "Oh, okay." I started out the door. And he said, "Where do you think you're going?" I said, "I'm going down to the police station to call my boss." And he said, "Oh, no, I'll take you." I said, "Man, I've been in a car all evening." I said, "I just soon walk." He said, "No." He said, "I can't let you walk because everybody in this town don't know you and you might not make it that far." I said, "Well, hell, I'll wait for you then." Yeah, man, that's some bad places. One place up there, it might have been Carbon, where they had to. Bill, was that the place they had that big old wooden auditorium with bleachers in it? I mean, a second thing in it? Balcony like?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of the name of it.
It wasn't Carbon, was it? That was another one. But anyway.
It was just as bad.
Yeah. I think Dickie Stanborn was there one night when the guy was up there in the balcony jumping up and down with a gun under his coat. And I think it was Dickie, I'm not positive, I told the policeman, he said, "Well, man, he stopped the match," and he was a baby face. But anyway, he says, "That guy up there's got a gun, one that's hotter and, you know, so much making a scene." So he looked up there and said, "Oh, that's Jim. If he wanted to shoot you, he would have already shot you." Yeah. And one night I was in there, and everybody was gone just about it, and I opened that old wooden, big old double wooden door. And there's three guys standing out there, and they just started shooting at me. I had to stay in, so sit back in and wait till they run out of bullets. Why could you leave? Yeah, Kentucky, some parts of it are pretty rough.
I always heard Harlan, Kentucky was dangerous.
Harlan, yeah.
Yes.
Harlan and
Hazard. Hazard's where Charlie Smith tells the story about he was up there and Harley Race was in the match with somebody and a riot broke out. And Charlie said he rolled out on the floor and he said he hit this guy. And he said the guy didn't even move. Said the guy never flinched. The guy never did nothing. Charlie said he looked at him and told him, said the police will take care of you. And said he jumped back in the ring.
Bill, what was that guy's name that was always tatering everybody? Like you used to go to the regular opera there in Nashville. Black-headed guy.
What did he do now, Joe?
He worked in Nashville for a long time. Most people didn't like to work for him because he'd potato you and everything else, you know. But he liked to go to that regular opera, not the Grand Ole Opera, Bill Opera.
Yeah.
You remember what his name was?
Nope.
But anyway,
I know who you're talking.
We were at some other place up in Kentucky, had a big auditorium. It's one of them, it looks like you could almost play football in it. And the bleachers went up on a slope. It wasn't real steep. So him and I were partners. We were going to the ring. And here come these five guys up there and said, walking beside us, going to the ring, and says, guys, just want to tell you. Tell them, and said, what is it, sir? Said, whoever wins this match tonight is they got to fight us. I said, really? Well, he turned around and looked at me, and my partner says, they'll look at back dressing room. Put back dressing room, and he had some in choker chains. He told me one of them, we put them on a trunk. We knew we was going over. And sure enough, they had the men of their word. We got our hand raised, here they come. We pulled them choker chains out, run all the way across that building up them bleachers, beating them with it. And then we had to get the police and get us out the back door. People just don't know what some of us went through to make a living, do they?
What's the biggest crowds you guys ever worked in front of, Dylan Jeff?
Crowd-wise, probably Greensboro. That's a big auditorium there. And we drew, me and Bill drew some of the biggest crowds we ever had in Nashville. In that old place at the fairground.
Mm-hmm.
And we was working with Johnny Long and Tojo, I think it was. And that's where I met Hank Williams Jr. I stand at the back door, and that's when he was trying to make a name off his daddy's name. And he come in the back door. We had that big crowd out there, and there's lines everywhere trying to get in. And so I'm standing there talking to Nick Goulas. And that little door we went in down the end of that old long building, it opened up, and there was Hank Williams Jr. He had them old beady round glasses, a white T-shirt, and jeans, and some shower shoes. And he says, Mr. Goulas, he says, and he wasn't well known like he is now, you know. He said, Mr. Goulas, you mind if I come in this door? I'm afraid somebody would recognize me if I stand on that line. I looked at him and said, the way you dress, who in the hell would recognize you? And I don't think he liked that too much.
What about you, Jerry? What's the biggest crowd you ever worked in front of?
36,000 in New Orleans. Superdome.
Superdome?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. That's a lot of people.
That's a long walk to a ring when you're in a place like that, then, Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Jerry, what kind of money did you make then?
He made a whole show night on there. Yeah.
I was flying back and forth then for Watts. I mean, I was back in Columbus. And, on that card, $450, not $4,500.
Don't forget, we was around. We know what it was. Yeah.
Now, Jerry, you were in Charlotte. You were in Greensboro. But if you worked that house, with it being a full house, and it would hold around 18,000 to 20,000, and from the, well, we didn't make main event, but we did semi, and I think we made, I don't know, 350. But Mr. Crockett was a lot better payer.
My first week in the territory up there, Ted was already there, the team Ted and I up there. My first week in that territory, I made a first night in Richmond. I made 600.
Good town.
Greensboro, I made 400.
Yep.
Where else was that? Charlotte, 350. This is for the week now. I made like 2,200 the first week.
Mm-hmm. You remember Harry Jones
those,
when he went
those
up there?
Those towns were on fire. I mean, they run spot shows, and you know, they, it was no matter where they ran, it was unbelievable. And, you know, you look back when that was going on, you thought that would never end. There was no way that could ever end.
Ain't that the truth?
I mean, y'all were up there. You know what the Carolinas was like. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It was just...
Yep. Very well taken care of.
Yeah, they took care of, you know, you'd go to Norfolk, you know, Richmond, I mean, you know, Greensboro. It's just... It was just unbelievable. It was just everywhere. You know, spot shows back then were drawing $15,000 spot shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I really enjoyed working for him.
Y'all worked for Senior, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's already passed away when I was up there.
Had he? Well, he's a great guy.
What was his name? Oh, God. His son-in-law.
Jimmy?
Was he up there?
No. Ringling.
John Ringling?
Yeah,
John,
yeah, he was there. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He was a great guy.
He was.
Oh, he was a sweetheart of a guy.
But then Junior is the one that got him kicked out of the family.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, I was there.
He knew more about the business. He forgot more about the business than they ever
knew. See, Crockett left it for him to run it.
That is correct.
And,
John was a great guy.
He sure was. And then Junior used to go get there early just so he gets after daddy passed away just to sit in his desk until Ringer got there. He wanted to be in up behind that desk so bad.
I know I was in Atlanta
the
one night.
Was it Francis? Was the daughter's name
Francis? Exactly.
Yeah.
I was in Atlanta one night, and John Ringley had come down to Atlanta, and it was like, John Ringley's going to be here tonight. John Ringley's going to be here. I mean, it was like the Messiah was coming, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he was such a nice guy. And then when I went to Louisiana, he was out there working for Watts. But I have no idea what ever happened to John. He was the nicest man.
Lives in Memphis, Tennessee.
Is that right?
Yep, lives in Memphis. If I ever find his address, I'll let you know.
Please do. I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah,
Joe and I used to drive him crazy, though, because we pulling the ribs and stuff all the time, and he couldn't understand it. Mr. Crockett knew what was going on, but John Ringland didn't.
Well, I tell you what, those Crocketts, even you know, after Jim Crockett Sr. passed away and John ran it until they ran him off, I mean, they were some of the best paying guys I'd ever worked for.
Oh, the whole bunch have always been good pay, but my thing was David wanted to wrestle. And Mr. Crockett called me in the office and told me, he said, Joe, David wants to wrestle. I've ordered his stuff. And he says, if I can book him with you, I would appreciate it because I know some of them other guys may hurt him just because he's my son. And I know you won't. And I said, well, that's fine with me, Mr. Crockett. And he said, but let me tell you this. If he gets out of line, you got to do what you got to do. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, you don't worry about it. If he gets out of line, you handle him just like you would if somebody else got out of line. I said, yes, sir. So anyway, I worked with him. We had some pretty good matches, but the thing got me mad at Junior was he told David, he says, you above this. And that turned me against him completely.
I didn't care for him at all.
Yeah. So anyway, David, after about 2 weeks there, he was up in, I think, Danville in a battle royal. Well, he got cute then. He come flying up there like Tarzan through the air, and somebody threw me in the rope. They turnbuckled head first, so I'm laying there. And I looked out the corner of my eye, and here he comes to the knee, hit me right in the spine. And like made me just pass out, you know. So I went over, I got up, went on back over and took care of him, you know. Next day, my scribe called me in the office. I said, uh-oh. All he believed his word was great, but, you know, he called me up and said, and, you know, he'd like to call you Mr. when he could talk business. And the old man did, and he said, Mr. Turner, I said, I need to see you in the office. I said, yes, sir. Whoops. So I'll go down to that office, and I'm thinking, well, I'm out of here now. So and he said, shut the door, and he said, I heard you and David had a little set-to last night. I said, yes, sir, we did. He said, I would like to hear your side of the story, sir. And I told him. And so he stood up, and he said, well, Mr. Turner, I got to tell you this. He reached his hand out and grabbed mine and started shaking. He said, you done the right thing.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How long did Gooden work?
How long what?
How long did he work?
David, I don't know. He'd work when I left there.
So I ran into him when they were running the shows down here. He was running the camera with Ole in that group.
That was Jackie.
Jackie
was
running the
camera.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, Jackie was wild now.
I like Jackie.
Yeah, he's the other character, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he was the best one of the bunch.
Yeah. He's the character. Didn't care about nothing.
And David was horrible on that microphone.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
Horrible.
I got to get away from the other phone. Yeah. But he's,
That might be the Crockett's calling.
Yeah. I tell you what, when I left that, I don't know if I told you all that story before. I know what the other phone is now because it's some beeping, but anyway, I'm going to keep on. Anyway, Aaron, y'all hear that beeping?
No.
No.
It's coming through on mine. But anyway, when I might have told you all this story about when I turned my notice in there, and Miss Crockett won't know why, and I said, well, because I'm not in none of you good, better towns, you know, for the last 2 months. And he said, well, I'm going to accept your notice because you turned in, and so the next time you have a problem, you just come talk to me.
So who anyway, was doing the book when you were there?
A Rip Hawk. And he wasn't crazy about Bill, and I don't think.
No. Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen.
Yeah. But anyway, old man Crockett says, so he took my notice. And he said, next time you come back, he says, if you have a problem about money, he says, just come see me. So when I got back the next time, I went in to get my check, and everybody else was getting there, and I didn't have one there. And I said, where's my check at? And it says, Mr. Crockett's got it in his office. And I went in there, and I said, you have my check, Mr. Crockett? He said, yeah. And he said, here, open it up and look at it. And I opened it up and looked at it, and said, pretty good check. And I said, and he looked at me, and he said, now, Mr. Turner, said, if that ain't enough, you just tell me. I'll take care of you. I said, yes, sir, that's plenty. Thank you. That's just the way he was. You couldn't help it.
I heard nothing but great things. I never got a chance to work for him, but I never heard nothing but great things about him.
Let me tell you what happened to Burhead Jones. You know, Rufus Jones, whatever name, was in there, went in there, and they was pushing him.
Who, Rufus?
Yeah. Wasn't that Rufus be able to come in there?
It was Rufus, yeah.
He spent a lot of time up there, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, he says, he come in, so they decided to bring Burhead in as his cousin to work a few angles, you know. Little Barry got there and worked three nights and went in there for his payday, and everybody would go to, most of them go to the same bank, get in line to get to cash a check. So old Barry had worked in three towns, and he got up there and signed his check and laid it up there, and he just run his mouth and not paying a whole lot of attention. And I think Barry had the most he's ever made in his life, about 500, you know. So he puts a check up there, and that woman counts out $100 bills to him. He says, "Ma'am, I think you made a mistake here, didn't you?" And he says, "Well, I looked at that check, it looked like it was $800. He said, he told me, "I'm real proud of that." He said, "Well, she told me, no, here it is, says $1,800. He said, "I'd like to faint it."
I bet he did.
Yeah.
I tell you what, they would pay you. They would flat pay you.
Yeah. 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 I think that's what, what the heck was that? I can't think of his name now. The black guy, Tony Atlas. That's what he made the first. He worked a couple of times when he started a business. And I think that's what he made in two nights of her. And he was green.
Man. Never could work.
Huh?
I say he never could work.
No, but he had a problem. With one guy got to fight with him. He bit his ear off.
That was Orndorff. Wasn't that Orndorff?
I believe it was. Bit part of his ear off.
Yeah.
I believe it was. But see, he had a thing. He wanted to always bring up the race card and talk about it, you know, and say things. Just like, see, when the first time he come around the matches was in Roanoke, Virginia. He lives a better way, and he come talk to me. And, heck, we was on the road all the time, and I didn't have time to deal with nobody. And he says, "I'd like for you to work out with me and train me and get me started in the wrestling business." And I said, "Brother," I said, "I'm tell you, be honest with you, right now I don't have the time." Well, he thought I didn't want to do it because of him, you know, because of the race he was, you know. And that had nothing to do with it. But he felt that way the whole time. And he felt that way about a lot of people was like that. And he ought to do better than that. You know, most wrestlers, all they're concerned about is getting out there and working and hope to have a good match. They ain't worried about who you are or what you do. If they did, they'd go crazy.
The boys were hunting green. They wasn't hunting black or white. They were hunting green.
That's right. That's for sure. In fact, that's one business I've told some people in my family. I said, if you want to learn to get along with anybody in this world, you need to be in the wrestling business. So you learn that you accept people for what they are and going about your business.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Guys didn't care about that.
No, they didn't care about it at all. It just, the way things was with him, though. But, Y'all remember Chooch?
Oh, please.
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. Yeah. There was an old-timer in the dressing room one night at the television station in Charlotte. Old Chooch come in and tell him, say, "That sucker come up high spots in the last 2 hours, all in his favor." And the old timer sitting there tying his shoe and just listening. When he got through, he said, "What do you think of that, Chooch?" Old timer looked at him. He says, "Well, just who in the hell thinks you could do all that well?"
That was a big wrestler, Joe, that lived near me. There in Charlotte.
Yeah, he's quite a golfer, too. I can't think of his name. And so that's a new one on me. I've not heard that name.
Who?
Yep.
Cheech. Who was that? Chooch.
Chooch.
Yeah.
Argentina Apollo.
Argentina Apollo, but he was
Everybody was Chooch.
Hey, oh, Chooch.
Okay. He would middle me worse than anybody I was ever in a ring with. Somebody would have him down, heel would be working on him and have his foot on his throat, and you're standing there counting. He'd reach up and hold the guy's foot where the guy couldn't break the hold.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, you're standing there counting, and he's holding the guy's foot. So why is it making you look like an idiot?
He didn't care.
He thought that crap was funny.
Oh, he didn't care.
How did they use him up there?
They used him pretty good in Charlotte. They didn't use him like he was very top, you know.
Right.
On the very top, but they used him pretty good.
Who was his partner up there, Joe?
I can't even remember. He was a character. He's always trying to act like he's younger than what he was, but somebody caught him one time dying his hair on his chest.
You know, he died young.
Yeah.
Yep, he sure did.
He was living here in Atlanta.
I think the last bit of wrestling he did is he worked for Einhorn. He and they had him and Louis Martin and his team together all the time. Maybe that's when he went to Charlotte. I'm not sure. Because they were all based, even though Einhorn was from Chicago, I think the base of operations was there in the Carolinas.
Uh-huh.
And because most of those guys wound up working back for the Crockett's. I know the Mongols went to working for Crockett. Rip Hawk did. Hawks Baker did. And Apollo did. And I think Dino Bravo was around the time Dino Bravo was going to the Carolinas around that same time when the IWA folded over. But, you know, Apollo was a Pfeffer creation.
Yes.
Rocca had started trying to run oppositions in New York, and he was starting to fade, and Pfeffer had already created Argentina Zuma, if you guys remember him. And he created Apollo, too.
Yeah. By the way, since you keep up with so much of them around the country, whatever happened to, like, Rudy Kay and that bunch from Canada?
They all wound up back up in Canada. You know, they ran the Maritimes, was pretty much their territory.
Yeah, they ran territory there.
I'm trying to think. I think Leo Burke's the only one of all of them. I think they're all dead now but him.
He's the tallest one, wasn't he? The dark-haired one?
Yeah, Leo was Bobby Kay was him.
He's still alive, and his brother. I knew him as Tommy and Terry Martin.
Uh-huh.
His name was Cormier.
I guess Tommy is still alive. I know
Tommy
Rudy
and Terry are.
Rudy Kay's dead. And Yvonne Cormier, who worked.
The Beast is dead.
And there was another one that died too, I think. Wasn't there five of them already? Four or five of them, Jerry?
Yeah.
I can't remember how many of them they were, but I think I can't remember what Tommy's real name was, but Leo Burke's real name is Leonce. He's still alive.
Uh-huh.
I can remember the Beast down in Louisiana.
Yes.
That's the first time I met him. He was in Louisiana.
The two brothers, they could, all of them could work.
Yeah, I liked all of them.
They were good workers.
Joe and I worked with, who was Rudy and who was the other guy's name, Joe?
Bobby. Yeah, well, I think it was Bobby.
Bobby, in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we worked with him a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of somebody else, too, that I was going to ask you about. Tell him I can't think of it. That's old age, I guess. Versus me,
mentioned Zuma. So the last I heard of him, he was owned a restaurant somewhere out in California. But that's been 10, 12 years ago, so I'm not even sure he's still with us anymore. But his real name was Manuel Chai, and the name of his restaurant, Manuel's.
Bobby.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you, in Las Vegas, the wrestler that would come over from L.A. that worked with us in with Gunkel.
Jack Armstrong.
Nicely. Do what?
Jack Armstrong.
Yeah, Jack Armstrong.
Yeah.
You remember him, don't you, Joe?
Yeah, he's the one that's always riding the car talking about how big a shooter he was.
Yep.
He was there again this year, Bill.
He what now?
He was there this year.
Is that right? Well, good.
And boy could eat,
yeah.
Yep. Was that him and Vitamins that night talking about how big a shooter he was, or was that that Hill guy?
Ron Hill.
Oh, Ron Hill.
Was it Ron Hill? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure
yeah.
it was him.
I'm sorry, Jack. You listen.
Yeah, Ron and Apollo got into a little thing in Columbus on a Monday night, and I wasn't there. I was in Augusta that Monday, but I heard about it. That Tuesday night, I was refereeing a six-man tag in Atlanta. And I don't remember who all was in it, but I know Apollo and Hill was there. And Bill Eady was working as one of the Mongols. There was the Mongols and Ron Hill. He was working under Hood. Well, it started up again in the ring there. And I backed up in the corner. And Bill Eady come running down the corner, and he said, jump in there between them, jump in between them. And I remember looking at Bill Eady. I was about 17. I looked at Bill Eady. I said, pal, I said, if you want to break them up, I said, you need to just climb right on in here. I said, because I'm going to stand right here in the corner.
Well, if it was Ron Hill, he was in the back seat of the car, and I was too, was coming back from a shot. And we was in Atlanta. But anyway, I believe it was in Atlanta. But anyway, this fool got back, he didn't talk so much about how tough he was and how he'd done this to this one and that one. And, of course, I was drinking that beer. And the more beer I drank, the more I can talk. So, anyway, he just kept on. And I told him, I said, you know what's wrong with this business? He said, what is that? I said, you two-bit shooters? He said, what do you mean by that? I says, anybody can hurt somebody if they give them the arm and you break it. They gave you that arm. You got to let them know you're going to shoot with them and then whip them to show that you ain't good. And I said, you ain't nothing but a two-bit shooter. That's all you are. I don't think he liked me too much after that.
I think you called him out, too, you know.
Yeah, and I don't remember everything I did.
I think you called him out on the side of the road.
Did I? Like I said, I was drinking beer. I might have. Yeah. And when I get drinking that beer back then, a bear wasn't too big for me. I was 10 foot tall and bulletproof sometimes.
Now, I don't know how true it is, but I'd heard the story that he had tried to run opposition to Eddie Graham down in Tampa. And he had gone on the radio and was talking about his group was, they were all real wrestlers, and that the other group was, you know, just phonies and all this stuff. And while he was still on the air, Eddie said Mike Graham, who at the time was 13 or 14 years old, wasn't even in the wrestling business, but Mike was an amateur champion and from middle school on, and supposedly he went down there and tied Hill in knots, but I don't know how true that is. But he always had a reputation as a shooter, but I don't know if anybody he ever shot on that he ever beat.
Yeah.
Hell, he wasn't big as a minute.
No.
Well, he's shooting now.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you who's probably some of the toughest shooters that come up in this business that they got going on now is the Malenko boys.
Oh, I'm sure.
Them boys were bad, but they're tough. You know, they their daddy told me that, you know, he had a gym out behind his house, and he said that they go out there and work with Carl Gotch every day. And he said he couldn't even go in the building because he couldn't stand to watch the punishment they was going through. And so when the one of them that had on spring break come up to North Carolina, the referee, and, you know, they've been in there with Carl Gotch, they've been back there shooting them matches, you know. So they, and Malenko told everybody, said, look, don't mess with the boy because he's got a hair trigger. You know, he's not used to this. So anyway, first thing to do, Wahoo McDaniel walked up and just going to tell him, you're already tough, and grabbed him by the wrist in Columbia, South Carolina, and he's tied up like a pretzel. And he couldn't move. He had his wing cut off and everything. So anyway, I got I've become a little bit friendly with the boy, and we was up in a little town up above Charlotte. I've got with Winston, one of them towns up there, but it's an outdoor show, and so he was refereeing my match. So I pulled one of them Fields tricks, man. Somebody take and build me, I'd throw an arm out and let it catch him, or throw a leg out and let it catch him, you know. And he caught on what I was doing. But he didn't jump on me, but at the end of the match, when I was fixing to go back to the dressing room, he walks over and he said, now, you want to wrestle me? I looked at him and I said, well, is that a damn challenge? He said, it sure is. And I said, well, in that case, I had a right to turn it down or accept it. And I turned it down, and he kissed my ass, stuck to the compliments.
You know, not the one that did all the work for Atlanta, but his brother, who is Joe Malenko, Joe Simon, he's a pharmacist down in Tampa. He was the bad one.
Well, that's the one I think was there.
Because Dean told me, he says Joe went for like 7 years every day to work out with Gotch. And I was in Japan with both of them. And I'm telling you, that those jokers, man, they wasn't no joke.
No. You know what he did?
A joke.
When he was up there refereeing, there's a little Korean boy there. I think he's from Korea. But anyway, they seemed to know each other or went down through some same training with somebody. But they get in do early and just referee a match for the match, do 5,000 Hindu squats.
I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, it just continues from the time they got there until it got time to go in the room.
Well, they were something. That Joe, both of Dean and Joe, but Joe was they knew some stuff, man.
Yeah.
They were dangerous.
Yeah, they was. Yeah. When they were talking about, when they was with this New York bunch, man, talking about me and 1,000 hoes, they probably had them.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. But it's, anyway, I done that, and I went back to the dressing room. Malenko said, what's going on out there, Joe? I said, well, your son challenged me. He said, what for? And I told him. And I told him to go to F himself. I'm almighty. And he said, well, watch me, because he's going to referee his daddy's match next. He said, watch this. I'm going to do the same thing. And Professor Malenko went out there and caught him with the arm and a leg. So the kid liked me, though. He wanted to go somewhere with him, you know. He didn't want to just sit in the motel room. So I took him out to a few bars, and one of them was a strip bar. And I got this girl to get up on the table and strip for him, you know, up on our table. And he was kind of shy then, but he didn't care too much for that. But it's like... I would tell you, Gene Anderson, one night, he stopped by and had a beer at Speed Hansen's place. And there was a stripper there, and she had her clothes off the top part. And so me and her knew each other. So anyway, she come on by me, and I motioned for her to rub her boobs up against Gene's head. And Gene answered, reached around and grabbed me up under the tender part of my arm, right by my armpit. I had a black spot as big as my darn leg.
But it still hurts, don't it?
Yeah.
We were in the Regency Hyatt House in Columbus, Ohio, and we're standing at the elevator, me and Gene, and the elevator door opens, and a certain referee from Cleveland, Tennessee is standing there with a girl in a pair of high heels and a fur coat, and that's all she had on.
Mm-hmm.
And we got on the elevator, and the elevator started up, and Ronnie says, look what she's got on under that coat, Gene, and Gene never turned around. He said, if she opens that coat, he said, I'm killing you. Got to the floor and got out.
Gene was a good guy, man.
Yes, he was.
He sure was. He sure was.
I thought the world of him.
I did, too. Yeah, one time, I used to pull a joke. I done it on Armstrong and a bunch of guys. When they give me a forearm on the ropes, I just stand up and say, is that all the hard you can hit? Bend him over and lay one in on the chest. Then they'd want to do it to me back, so they'd bend me over and lay in there. I said, man, if that's all the hard you can hit, you're in trouble. You know, just pulling a joke. Well, we was in a battle royal in Lynchburg, Virginia, and I was going to pull it on Gene. And so Gene bent me back over the ropes. He come down and, like, tore my breast off, man. And just with a forearm now, and I wasn't paying attention to what he was doing. And so, anyway, I went to my knees, man. My eyes watered and everything. So, anyway, when we got back upstairs in that dressing room there, I went to his dressing room. He said, what are you doing in here, man? You ain't supposed to be over here. I said, I ain't leaving until you tell me what you done. He said, no, I ain't going to show you. I said, I'm not leaving. And we both going to get in trouble because I'm sitting my butt right here with you. And he showed me. All he did was just twist that hand and catch it when he coming down. And Buddy, like, tore every muscle in my tent loose.
He was a tough son of a gun, man.
He was. People didn't know how tough he was, brother.
He had these little short, stubby fingers.
You'll pull mm-hmm. fingers with him.
And other than Danny Hodge, I don't know anybody else that had a strong hand. And he would, you didn't never get no test of strength or thumb wrestle with him or none of that crap. You don't let him talk you into that. But he got on Stan Frazier one night in Atlanta. I was sitting at the table there by the ring, and he looked at me, and he winked at me, and he went, watch this. And he got old Frazier in a test of strength, and he short-fingered him. And he fell on his knees, selling, and Frazier was on his tiptoes, squealing like a pig. Funniest thing I have ever seen. The more he'd holler, the more Gene would sell.
Yep. Well, it was a good old days, boys. Good old days.
A lot of good guys.
Yep.
Yeah, it was. All of them was good guys, and actually, all of them was pretty tough guys.
There were some tough ones, I don't think they was.
Oh, yeah. All of them was pretty tough in some way or another, you know. I mean, all of them may not have been, you know, all of us may not have been known as tough shooters or anything, but we were all fighters. We could scrap. You know, because most of us had to fight.
I said, back in those days, you had to be, especially if you worked heel at all, because you never knew. You had to fight your way back to the dressing room or fight your way out in the parking lot or whatever. You had to be able to take care of yourself.
And like a little spot show with you one time. We got in a fight going to the dressing room. Bill hit this guy so hard it broke Bill's hand.
Really?
Yeah.
I just wanted that guy to die.
I don't know. I don't know if I ever told you all that. I went to a spot show one time up in Atmore. And anyway, I'm on the way to the dressing room, and I had heat. And there's an old man there, and he's probably 80, somewhere between 80 and 90 years old. But he was so excited, he's jumping up and down, and he had his shoe off. And he's hollering, "I'm going to hit you, you SOB." And so I'm thinking, that old man ain't got enough energy to hurt you. I said, "Go ahead and get out of your system." That fucker hit me on the chest with that shoe, and I could read cat's paw for about 2 months on my chest. And I count every one of them nails that's holding that heel on.
Still hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah. That joker laid one on me, buddy.
Well, guys, we are down to the wire. Bill and Joe, I appreciate you guys joining us. You both was impromptu. It's always, you guys are always a welcome addition to our show.
Yeah.
And you spike our ratings every time that we have you guys on the air with us.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, buddy.
No problem at all. Bill's going to get some
more. Send the check tomorrow, will you?
Mike. What's that?
Send my check tomorrow, please.
Okay, I will do that. Send me one for your next meal.
Yeah.
Better pay it. Yeah.
You guys got anything you want to plug? Joe Turner will be appearing at the flea market on Chillinger Road this weekend in Mobile, Alabama.
Yep. I sure will be.
Doing magic carpets.
Yeah, got oriental carpets, bed pillows, comforters, sheets, hand carved rugs. We got it all there.
And have a very limited supply till we can get to the car and get another limited supply and bring it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I kind of enjoyed this tonight. This was a good conversation, guys.
This was good.
It's always good to have you and Bill on. Yeah. Well, Jay, you got anything you need to plug?
No, sir. I just enjoy it tonight.
It's always a pleasure. What about you, Bobby? What are you doing this weekend?
I am staying in Jackson, Georgia, good Lord willing, and I'm going to get my mom, and she's going to spend the weekend with me. So we're going
to
celebrate Mother's Day with her.
I'll tell your mom,
Bobby,
I said hello.
But you know Sandra can buy me a...
Do what?
You're not making Sandra buy me a Mother's Day present?
You are.
Yeah, I told her she'd been calling me a mother all year. She went to buy me a present.
Get you something.
Bobby.
Yes, sir.
Give my love to your beautiful wife, please.
I'll do it, sir. She's sitting right here. I'll tell her.
Yes, sir.
Well, guys, y'all have a great week.
You too, guys.
Yeah,
we'll do this next week.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.